software patents are here, and they're really hard to kill. And they keep coming. So it is time to do something. Our next two speakers will give you a brief overview of what happened in the past, how it worked, and what we could do about that in the future. Please give a very warm applause to Iga and Benjamin.
Thank you. Okay, then. I cannot see the first slide. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to do anything, or it's going to be just screened behind my back. I don't know, so I'm still waiting. Hello, my name is Iga. I'm a lawyer, so someone with totally different interests probably than you do have. And what I can say by now, all the law-related conference I've ever been to are much more boring than this one. Okay, so we have... I've been into this problem for many years. I've defended my master thesis on patenting software, and I thought that by the end I've done it, it was like 2009, we have almost 2016, I was sure that it's probably has to be settled, but it's not. And a guy who works at the Polish patent office, he told me that maybe I would like to go once again into the subject because there are many new decisions, the problem has not been solved. And right now what I would like to do is to motivate you to call you for action because the situation needs to be changed and you're going to see why and in which direction right now it's going to. All right, what do we want to talk about with Benjamin here? We're still a little bit in a Christmas mood, so this is a scene from Christmas Carol. As far as you know, the Scrooge is being visited by the ghost of the past, ghost of the present, and ghost of the future. I'll tell you a little bit about the past and the present, and probably something that Benjamin has to say combines the present situation with the future. Right, how far we've come since the directive proposal? You see the directive proposal, this is this directive that was rejected by the European Parliament on, well, now that's the question, on what was it? Because in Europe, we tend to pretend that it was on something like computer-implemented inventions. I will tell you something about the situation in the US, and they purely call it like the software patents, but in Europe, it was called like computer-implemented inventions. And how far have you come from that way? Well, then we were in the middle of nowhere because actually we didn't go anywhere. Some people say that, okay, so was it finished by 2005? So they rejected the directive, so it means that they just said no to software patents. We don't have any software patents in Europe, and that's totally not true. And well, we're here in a black hole because nothing has happened, good happened, between this time gap. Benjamin will tell you something more about unitary patent, and this is something what would be really dangerous right now in that case. When we'll be in 2016, it's up to you. We would like to suggest you to some actions. I've been to a very brilliant speech of that guy that named Thomas from Save the Internet. He described the ways that they undertook to fight for the free internet. He said that some of the things he said, it's too late for that. So, but don't be worried because he finished like with keep fighting, so this is what we're going to do. All right, so how does European look like relating to software patents? And I'm going to just give you a brief speech from the legal point of view. First of all, we have European Patent Convention. That is the source of the mess. You must remember that does not give you a patent that is effective in all European countries. This is only a bundle of patents. This is very important because each national court, each national officials may refuse granting this patent on the basis of European Patent Convention regarding, for example, the differences when it comes to patenting software. And Benjamin will tell you about this regulation introducing implementing enhanced cooperation, so I will just skip it right now. What's the problem with that? First of all, in the very basic version of European Patent Convention, we didn't have anything about fields of technology for which the patent's supposed to be granted. It was something that was so-called obvious, but it was that much obvious that nobody actually knew what it meant. We lawyers tend to keep to the idea that the patents are only for the technology, for something that may be verified by the experiment, for something that it's connected in a tangible world, not for mathematical or abstract ideas. So that was introduced in 2000, so that is pretty late, because this is something, as I'm telling you, it's a very basic rule in patent law. Then we have exceptions from the patent protection. And as you can see here in letter C, we have programs from computers. And this is what European Patent Convention says. But then there is a problem, because it says that they're not protected only as long as there are programs as such. So it gives the false assumption that there are some computer programs that are patentable and some computer programs that are not. And when you read the patent claims, that people who want to convince you that what they actually have is not a software patent, well, this description is something like that. They know that they do not sell meat, but actually, what is it? Nobody knows. You can only imagine how it looks like. This is the impression that I get when I read the patent claims. And at first, I thought this is my fault because I'm a lawyer, I don't understand them, but I consulted them and no one understands what they try and express. Apart from the fact that it's obvious they do not have the invention. They have a software something and it tastes like chicken. Okay then. In 2000, before the directive was rejected, of course that was after several years of implementing the action plan, and the European Commission, first of all, told the citizens that they have to do something because this is what is required by the economy in the US and the economy in Japan. What they forgot to tell was that the attitude in US towards software patents has been changing, and that the conclusions that they gave wasn't true anymore, and they are not true right now. So, the European Commission said that since by the end of 2000, the IPO already granted 20,000, thank you, software patents, it means that we need to change the law. Normally, I would treat it as a confession that they did something against the law because the law said you may not grant the patent, but they say, okay, that's a great argument, let's introduce the software patent protection. And this is something that they failed to do. They also wanted to cross out this exception for computer programs from the European Patent Convention as the result of the fact that they already granted that many patents for software. Those two actions actually failed. How actually European Patent Office deals with that kind of applications? Well, they tried to convince you once again that this, what is claimed, this is not purely computer program, this is something in between. So at first they went with the approach that checked the technical contribution approach. So if the solution gives up something to the technical aspects, regardless whether it lies in software itself on in any different characteristic of invention, that's still cool. So we may grant the patent on the solution that it's purely software. If we cross that out, that'd still be nothing actually new to the technical state. Now, it evolved, but actually the result is the same. Now, the IPO goes with further technical effect. What does it mean? No one knows. It means that software may produce a further technical effect. Why is it further? Because it produced no technical effect while using the invention. Okay, these are some examples you may go through. What is technical in the eyes of IPOs? And for example, in Polish legislation, we don't have, as in many legislation, this exclusion that patent cannot be granted only for software as such. So our officials, our courts just say, okay, we don't have to apply that because we don't have it in our national law. European Patent Convention is something that only allows you to get faster the protection in the countries that you indicate. So this is only procedural stuff. The thing, if you get the patent or not, depends on the local authorities. What do we have here next? The question, the answer to it is supposed to be obvious. Can the president of IPO instruct national judges? Can he or she, depending on their circumstances? Well, we're supposed to say that no, but there is a curious case of Polish cases, but I'm truly convinced that it's not only what's happening in Poland. I'm telling about Poland cases because this is something that I know from my practice, from my legal practice, and let's say my scientific activity. What's happening in Poland and maybe happening right now in your country? Okay, if you want to get a patent, you go to the Patent Office of Republic of Poland. If you're not pleased with the decision, especially when you are Siemens, Google, or any huge company that the software patents was rejected, then you can appeal to District Administrative Court, and then the last chance, Supreme Administrative Court. And what is going on right now in Poland? At the first instance, like Patent Office says, This is what you've given us. It's nothing more but a pure software, even though you're trying to convince us that it's not. We don't grant you the patent. We don't care that you've already have a European patent for that, because we have our domestic legal provisions, and that's, we don't have that kind of exclusion as such. We don't know it is as such. As such, I'm telling you, you're not getting a patent. So then it's getting higher instance, district administrative court, and usually those judges are totally in line with patent office. They say, yes, we are truly convinced. There were opinion of the experts. This is not the invention. We don't get a patent for that. And then magic happens. It goes to Supreme Administrative Court. And for the last few years, this is what's happening. First of all, this is the one of the judgments, but I could name many of them. As you can see, it's pretty fresh. So there are some kind of instructions. They are not called instructions. They are called justifications for the judgment. And the justifications are that Polish Patent Office is obliged to follow IPO's understanding of invention of its technical character. Why? Because this is international agreement and it is superior to our national law. The problem is that that would be true if that would be the same matter that is regulated. But European Patent Convention does not tell you about the content of the patent, about what you can do. This is just a procedural stuff. The thing's gonna be changed after unitary patent will come into force. The Benjamin will talk about that. Right now, the national authorities have still the power to say no. And what's curious, actually, this is applied also to purely domestic cases, when we even don't have the IPO patent evolved, but because we are the part of the European Patent Organization, we're supposed to follow that. Then, they also say, by they, I mean the judges of the Supreme Administrative Court, that IPO's reasoning is coherent with TRIPS. I would like you to go to this website I recommend you, because there is a resolution that started by Max Planck Institute that explains that still the countries are independent of how they actually interpret the technical character. They don't have to follow any imposals of international law. They are free to do that. So this is another lie. And the final one, that Polish Patent Office is obliged to follow IPO's decisions and proceed according to guidelines for examination in the IPO. So something that was designed for the internal use suddenly is right up as if that was any kind of source of law, because the Polish judges says that we are obliged to do that because this is for the common good, this is international thing. Let's make it clear that we do it the same way as the IPO does, but no one judges if the IPO's okay or not with that. Okay, how does it look like in US? And I'm talking about that because, as I told you at the beginning, the European Commission says that they had to introduce some changes, some amendments to European Patent Convention by ruling out the computer programs exception, because this is what US actually imposes on us. So this is on what the innovative technology is built in US. This looks a little bit different in US. First of all, they don't have any particular provision that would say that software patents are allowed. But there are, of course, much the big interests that say that that could be read in this provision where, because it says that you can get a patent over a process. But that time when this provision was made, no one ever thought about computer programs. So this process is got nothing to do with the process that machine does according to the algorithm. What they also have, they don't have the legal exclusions, but they have the case law. So these are judicial exceptions to the four categories, like this processes, manufacturing, compositional matters. If there's a law of nature, natural phenomena, or abstract idea, then you don't get a patent. And now the task of the judge is to look at the invention, to look at the computer program, to look at the business method. Right now, business methods are usually introduced by the use of software patents. So sometimes they're combined with each other. So someone has a way in which the business is supposed to be conducted and introduces it through the software. So it's like a double claim here. Look at these statistics. They are pretty fresh because they are from the end of the October. And as you can see here, the total invalid under this provision that says what may be the subject to intervention is pretty high. And if you go to another statistics, like 85 to 90%, depending on the court, it's all about software or business methods. So it means that US is no longer pro software patents. This is false assumption telling that we have to change our European law to give equal chances to what's going on in America. The thing that is going on in America are really surprising. There is a brilliant guy, he's called John Oliver. I wanted to post his video, but I'm afraid that he's would stole the show, so I wouldn't. Just time into YouTube, not right now, the last week show with John Oliver, and he tells there something that I cannot tell whether it's true. This is as if sometimes I read political description of what Polish government had done. I have no idea if it's true or is it not true. Did someone enter in the middle of the night of the NATO siege or not? I have no idea if it's true or not. What actually he said? He said that American companies deduced that there is in Texas, in one of the city, there is a court that is very, very, well, I don't know how even to call it that. He understands the pain of the big companies, and the jurors also do understand them. So if you want to sue someone, go there. They don't have that many inhabitants, but if you check how many actually lawsuits were brought them, this is highly technological, inventive city. And the information that was passed, and I cannot tell you whether it was true or not, there was a journalist inside of the in front of the courthouse, and she said, look, this is ice ring that was sponsored by Samsung so we could skate during when there is no snow and there is no ice in front of the courtroom that was sponsored by Samsung. Is it true? Is it not? I have no idea. But if it's true, it's a very simple message. Go pro Samsung, so you'd have to... So that would be easy for you to get the ice ring before the courthouse. Okay, so this is the American attitude right now. Usually you can go through that in that kind of stages. I don't want to go through that cases because you probably know them. The thing is that the attitude has evolved. It has changed from the time that when the court said that it's enough if you give a new software to totally not new machine, you get as a result of the invention. Okay, but that was many years ago. Right now, after the Bielski case, after the Alice case, it's obvious that American courts really don't want to get a patent for abstract ideas, and they are not that easy to be deceived. Okay, so this is the description of the cases. You may go for the presentation. I don't want to waste time for that right now. What I wanted also to tell you that would be very important in a European case. What can we do about that? The great thing was done in US by the year 2012. There was a great conference. Why I call it great conference? First of all, a lot of people representing different societies came there, different stakeholders, not only lawyers who can tell whatever they want, because well, who cares if it doesn't have application? This is something that that can exist without any application. I may say whatever I want. But they also gathered the programmers. They also gathered the representative of a huge technological thing, and they say that actually they go for the patents only to defend themselves. They don't need them. But if they see that many people are getting patents, they also want to do that. So these were the solutions that are suggested. I will skip to this getting rid of all software patents. I'm not saying that it's fair, but at least we know what we're standing on. Right now the situation is not good because one may be granted a patent and the other may not. This is something that is the worst for the competition, and I think that this is something that we're supposed to oppose. All right, so are we helpless? I would say that not. And here we have some voice from the society that tells what's supposed to be done. I highly recommend you to go through the Bundestag motion addressed to the German government. They say they require from their government to not to allow to give software patents, just to focus on copyright protection. And the very brand new resolution of December 17th on patents of bio technological inventions as broccoli and tomatoes. And if you go for this resolution of EP, as you can see here, it's exactly what we need in case of software patents, because they want to explain how all the provisions are supposed to be understood. And what Benjamin will talk about in a minute, how it's going to look like after the unitary patent comes into force, because if it comes into force, then the national judges wouldn't have any authority to decide whether the patent is supposed to be granted or not. The Polish approach towards this unitary patent has changed, because from the very enthusiastic in the beginning, we went for the enhanced cooperation, but at the very last moment, Polish government just didn't sign the final papers. But if he wishes to do that, there's open way. So we need to do something just to tell people that it is important and it wasn't solved by the year of 2005, that the directive was rejected. It doesn't mean that we don't have software patents in Europe. All right, so probably Benjamin would like to take the floor right now, because I heard some ringing and probably it was addressed to me. So the floor is yours. Thank you. You want this one?
You change the slide.
This one, that's...
Okay. The first slide. Normally there is a picture, very important picture, and it's not on the slides, so... we have to do something about it. What? Otherwise, I try to take my computer. Do you have internet there? Or?
Yes. Okay, so probably that was very anti-software stuff. Yeah. All right, so we're
so,
going to...
I'm going to start presenting myself. So I'm Benjamin Henrion. I'm from Brussels in Belgium.
Sorry.
And basically, I started the university in 1998. And that was the beginning of the internet, the fast internet at the university. And I went on some websites, translated into many languages, that was asking a petition to Commissioner Karel van Miert, who was a commissioner for the internal market, for a study on software patents. And that was made by a person named Hartmut Pilch. Hartmut Pilch is the founder of the FFI. And that's how I became involved into software patents. So I then organized some conference with my Linux user group in my university, inviting people who worked on the version 1.0 of the first attempt to change the law regarding software patents in Europe. And that first change was trying to remove the word computer programs from the list of exceptions in the European Patent Convention. So the patent community tried to do that via a diplomatic conference, like for any international treaty, you have to call for a diplomatic conference where all the countries like Monaco or France or Germany have each one vote. And Hartmut Pilch and another Frenchman, Jean-Paul Smet, managed to convince the delegation of France and other countries to oppose this removal of the word computer programs from the list of exceptions. And so the diplomatic conference happened. They managed to get through in 2000 a revision of the EPC to insert words from TRIPS that says that patents should be granted for any field of technology. And when you read the convention and you read this new thing, you could say that there might be a clash between the exceptions and the between those two articles. So at the end, the result of the EPC 2000 was that there was a huge frustration among the patent community to not being able to remove that exception to match the practice of the European Patent Office. The European Patent Office has been granted software patents since mostly the first big decision, administrative one, was in 1986, where they started to grant software patents. So the next step was to call this community wanted to find another way. And so they asked the European Commission to launch a process for having a European directive. And this process lasted from 2000 to 2005. And that was the period of software patents version 2.0. Maybe I can try to get my slides. I will skip the picture, even though it was important. So actually, the picture I wanted to show you, which someone ruined my presentation. I prefer PDF for a reason. So the picture I wanted to show you we were in the European Parliament in July 2005, and there was another lobby from the big companies that rented a yacht in the European Parliament. So European Parliament is two buildings with some river crossing in the middle, and they wrote a yacht with a big banner, a vote for CII, vote for software patents, basically. And on my side, I was also helping to organize people with yellow t-shirts in front of the European Parliament so that we had like protesters in front of the Parliament. And I was so upset by this vote that I managed to call a friend of mine who was in the front of the European Parliament, and I saw that there were some place to rent some kayaks, and I asked him, "Can you rent some kayaks and kick me that boat?" So they took some banners saying "Software patents kill innovation," and they went with two, three kayaks fighting against that yacht. And so at that moment. At that moment, the decision of the European Parliament was already kind of done. The vote was not done, but the crucial moment was the other side, the big corporation, asked for dropping the vote on this issue, and they asked for a new European patent court. So I was very surprised because, to my opinion, it's if they cannot change the law, they cannot change the law. The problem is, in this case, is that you have at least seven or eight different interpretations of what the law means, and so it depends on the judge. It depends on the judge what is going to be the interpretation. So actually now, in 2005. The plan for what is now becoming the European patent was already the third version of software patents in Europe, which is not reopening the software patent debate, but having setting up a court system, a pan-European court system, which is outside of the structure of nations, outside of even Europe, the European Union itself. So, and at that time, I don't know if I can go find my slides back. So that was a press release that was published by ECTA, which was regrouping the Microsoft, IBM, and others. And you had to have a look on what they published. It was clear that their plan at the time was already to prepare a call for European Patent Court. So they said, we're going to look at how to improve the patent system for everybody in another way. So this quote is on a website called epla.ffi.org. And that's basically when we were talking about this directive in Brussels, there was a representative of the EPO, David Sant, who is now working as a patent attorney in London, filing software patents or at least helping them. And he said, "Yeah, we don't need this debate about software patents. We just need a unified patent litigation system." Because if we have this unified patent litigation system, we don't have any difference between UK or Germany if they interpret the convention differently. No, we have a central court that's going to decide, and it creates a single point of failure, a single point of reference, where we know the interpretation for sure. Okay. So this is a screenshot from the... So after the directive, there was 6 months just after the directive, there was a commission relaunching consultation about patents, how to improve patents. And there was like a huge submissions from small software companies that participated to the directive. And the outcome of this consultation was the relaunch of a treaty that was negotiated back before, which is what's called EPLA, the European Patent Litigation Agreement. And the European Patent Litigation Agreement was a clone of the EPC, but for courts. So in Europe, you have, for the grant part, you have the EPO, which is granting those national patents in a central way. But those national patents, they still have to be litigated by country by country. You don't have a court system which is doing this, the same role as the EPO, but for enforcing the patents. So this EPLA treaty was coming from the EPO circles, and so they discussed that option to sign having an EPLA back in 2007, and that was mostly rejected because France and other countries said, yeah, but how does that fit with the European Union system? How does that play with the European Court of Justice? And so France said we have constitutional problems, we cannot sign this treaty. And so they made another version and another version. It became the UPLS, the European the Union Patent Litigation System. So they kind of made several versions through the years, up to a point where they had some kind of thing that could be called compatible with the role of the European Court of Justice. And so what happened is that they signed something back in 2012, which is called the Unitary Patent and the Unitary Patent Court, which is formed out of three regulations that has to be ratified by each national parliament in each country. And the status, it is now that 8 countries have ratified by heart, France, Denmark, Portugal, Malta, and some others. But the main 2 countries that has to ratify in order for the treaty to enter into force, the main 2 countries are UK and Germany. And those 2 countries have not ratified yet. One of the issues is the Brexit in the UK. Because if the question is whether they put the ratification before the Brexit or after the Brexit. And the second question is if the UK goes for Brexit, what happens with the treaty? Because it says that's a separate discussion. So what I wanted to say is that this screen capture comes from the website of the European Parliament, where it's a QA about the 2012 agreement that was signed in December. And they said that they have a FAQ, and they said, can software be patented under the new rules? And they said no. And when I read that, I was like, okay, they fall, I mean, it's propaganda, and they fell into some trap. So this is a tweet from a conference, a recent conference in London, where the representative of the EPO said basically, yeah, the European Patent Court will provide strong harmonization for ICT or software, and will play a dominant role in the patent world. So that's the fact. I wanted to show contrast between how the legislation is sold, how they sell it to people, and what it means in reality after it has been adopted. They say, yeah, it's about software patents. So a small initiative that I made back in March in Belgium, we have a very interesting country with 3 official languages, mostly German, French, and Dutch, and there's a special case where a patent granted to a German company got granted in Belgium without any translation to French and Dutch, and it was declared valid for the whole country, even if most people in Belgium don't speak German. So there is already in the law in Belgium very strange things about validity of translations. And the main goal of the unitary patent on the grant side is to remove mandatory translations for patents. So actually the big cost of when you apply for a patent and you want the 27 member states of the EU, it's very costly because you have to translate in a legalese words in each language. And they made a, DPO made a partnership with Google so that they can have automatic translation of patents. And that's actually what is in the regulation, the council regulation, is that they have a 10-year period where they start with a system where companies have legally binding versions in English and non-legally binding automated translation with Google Translate with a non-legal effect. So they created a new law that says well, automated translation without any legal validity is okay. So if you Google for the challenge, I raised three important points. The first was languages. As a French native speaker, of course, I felt a bit offensed by the fact that I don't have a legally binding version, and I have to build a business on that. So the Spain also made an appeal to the European Court of Justice against the unitary patent on five or six points, and one of the points was the language translations. I mean, I do have a girlfriend who is Spanish. And I've been to the family in Spain, and they mostly only speak Spanish. The court says, yeah, it's perfectly fine if you discriminate people and have this automated language translation system for the unitary patent. And basically, they said they give the green light to the unitary patent in for that issue. Another interesting point, a legal point, was you have those three regulations, and then you have the rules of procedure of the court. And I was in a conference back in the end of 2014, where a representative of Microsoft was lobbying for some rules on the thresholds for injunction. So thresholds for injunction is whether you can freeze some assets, whether you can the judge can decide to stop the for example, the Xbox being sold in Germany and things like that. And he was very surprised because he was lobbying people who were not politicians. He was lobbying people who were an administrative committee, but who had the power to write some rules. And afterwards, I engaged with a lawyer who was very critical on that point because he said, yeah, normally rules of procedure for a court are decided and accepted by parliaments. So in the unitary patent, you have a committee drafting 130 pages of legal rules, and that's mostly lawyers and judges that even write the rules for their own future court. And there's something there which I was not very comfortable, and I found very because the DPO cannot be attacked in court for what they do. And so the rule, it's called in English the rule of law. In French, it's l'état de droit. And the rule of law says that there should be an institutional system where the public authority is regulated by law. So unfortunately, this appeal was rejected because there's a differentiation in Belgium between appeals for against normal law and against international treaties. And we filed it just the last day of the 6 months, but actually it was 6 weeks, so our appeal was rejected. But I'm looking at other countries like Portugal, where it's way easier. There's no constraint on how you can file something against the Constitutional Court. And I'm also looking at forming a group of lawyers and experts on how to bring those 3 points to the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg. But for that, I might need to raise a bit of money in the future, in the near future, via some crowdfunding or something. Okay. So what is going on right now with DPO is there is some crisis going on because I don't know if you read some news, or at least if you are interested, there is a very interesting blog called Tech Rights, where many people in the staff of DPO are very upset about new staff rules pushed by the president of DPO. And there's an ongoing strikes every 2 weeks. The work atmosphere is not very good. The people who committed suicides and so the atmosphere there is not great, and there's many people there are afraid. They have keyloggers on their computers. The management is trying to spy everything they do to avoid leaks. So I wanted to mention a very small point here, which is another angle of attack against the Unitary Patent, is that they are, it's Article 142 of the European Patent Convention. And they mentioned here that they kind of solve the problem of enhanced cooperation with the Council regulation. So if you are a specialist in international law, normally you are able to have an agreement in international law, not using EU law to fix international law. So that's for Spain if they want to go forward. So the future, the near future, is that I'm preparing something on the legal side, but I would be very interested if some other people join to wake up the coalition in countries such as Germany, UK, or even other countries where the EPC is not yet ratified, because there's evidence that this court is not made for people, it's made for the patent system, and it's going to contribute to the patent inflation, to the patent warming, the global patent warming of more patents, cheaper patents, patents for more fields, patents for software, patents for biotech, patents for medical treatments, medical, it's called, there's medical techniques. There is a need for getting to your parliament and say, look, we have some problems with this unitary patent monster. So I wanted to give the floor to André. So André is the secretary of FFI, and he made an initiative which is, he called for a petition at the EU level to integrate the EPO inside the European Union system. So I wanted to give him the floor for 1 or 2 minutes.
Okay. Do you have the microphone?
I don't know. What? No.
Do you have the file?
You can do it without the slides. No?
No, the file.
Yeah, I know, but...
Okay, so...
Maybe you have to speak in the microphone
what
there.
Switch on the microphone?
Yeah.
Yeah. Does it work? Yeah. Okay. So many of the problems that are very technical and maybe very abstract for people not working in the field of patents. boil down to governance issues within the patent system. And out of these governance issues, whether you're pro-patent or anti-patent or reject patents in certain fields or are satisfied with the patent system or not, there should be some window for reform, for the ability of the lawmaker to somehow influence the process. And during the last 20 years, there was this tendency within the patent system to shield itself from the political process, from the democratic process. And it's going further and further. And one of the main points of this unitary patent court is that it's like a judiciary without a legislative correction branch. So the European Parliament cannot change what the judiciary then decides. And that's somehow against basic principles of governance. So regardless how we see the issue of software patents, we want to somehow bring this institution, the European Patent Office, back into the EU system. Because the EU system is very well developed and the EPO is, say, it's a treaty organization from the in the 1960s, 1970s style. So there's no parliamentary oversight and so on. So I just filed a petition to the European Parliament and I got confirmation like 2 months ago that it was accepted. So the substance of my petition, in short, is, first of all, I want the European Parliament to have the ability to send questions to the European Patent Office or its administrative council that's governing the EPO. So how do we get Parliament oversight of the EPO? Right now, if they write to the Commission or to the Council, they say, but this is not an EU institution, we can't do it. So the way to do it, very simply, is the European Parliament can independently, with the EPO, try to get an interinstitutional agreement. So my petition is about asking the European Parliament to start a negotiation process with the European Patent Office to start a do you have it online?
To get on the screen.
Can you put it online?
I don't know how to do it.
You can
put the screen there and there.
Okay.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. So according to me, the European Patent Office is an international European institution which does not fall under EU law, which is right. He proposes that the EU contacts the EPO in order to conclude an interinstitutional agreement that would enable the members of the European Parliament, your elected representatives in the European Parliament, to address parliamentary questions to the EPO and improve the parliamentary supervision of the EPO. The petitioner, that's me, also asks the European Commission to harmonize national substantive patent law so that patent law becomes part of the acquis communautaire. What does it mean? Well, the European Software Patents Directive was rejected, and there's no European patent law. There's just national patent law, and then we have the European Patent Office that centralized in the 70s the granting of patents and then became like the de facto institution deciding what's patentable or not, but that's not really the point behind this European Patent Convention. So my idea is there should be a directive on European level that at least harmonizes patent law, like the status quo, not specifically addressing software patents, just the law, so it's on the European level and you harmonize all the national laws, because then actually the European Union, the European Commission, gets in charge because it's part of the so-called acquis communautaire. That's, again, a very technical term, but it basically means everything that's regulated on the EU level. And, because the major differences that still exist, Poland has a completely different law than Germany, and this would then enable, actually, on the European side, that we are able to balance the different areas of patent law with, say, competition law, with standardization, because it's all on the same level. And the EPO, which is just a patent office, it cannot deal with all these differences. It's a de facto harmonizer. So I guess it's good for the balance of powers, and it would strengthen also the international negotiating position of the European Union in matters of patent law with respect to third parties, like on the international global level with WIPO, the SPLT, TRIPS, and in trade fora. So my petition, the name of my petition Oops. My petition has a number, and that's 2370-2014. So when you just remember this, 2370/2014, that's the name of my petition, then you are able to support my petition by writing to the petition committee of the European Parliament, say, wow, this is a good idea, and I also have these experiences with the European Parliament, and let's do something about it. And I guess it would be very helpful to get some public support for my petition. And when they see in the European Parliament that there's a lot of attention to this proposal for an institutional reform, which just leads to sane governance, not resolve the issue of software patents, just moves a bit to sane governance, then I would say there's a process now where you can inject your stuff. Without a process, we can talk, sit in a room, but there's nothing right now that can be done. And maybe then we'll get hearings, we'll get some experts' discussions when there's a huge public interest in my petition. So just remember the number 2370/2014. And I would very much welcome if you write some letters in support to the petition committee of the European Parliament under this subject. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Iga and Benjamin. If you have questions, please line up at the microphones. We have around 7 minutes for a few questions if we have them. Are there questions from the internet?
Yes, I have a question. It is, is there a differentiation between the patentability of computer software and mere mathematical formulas?
Maybe you can answer that one.
Like, where's
for, the for example, there's compression algorithms for, mm-hmm. for music. For example, MP3 was patented.
Well, I've heard about few solutions of that kind, but the question is that they actually give patents for the solutions that you once known about, and this is like first come, first served. So probably in that case, you're supposed to look for that sort of patent. So maybe not particular on compression, but probably in that part.
So actually in the European Patent Convention, you have another item for the exclusion of algorithms.
As an abstract matter, so.
Yeah, purely an abstract matter. But when it comes to, let's say, if you implement in the form of computer program, you fall, let's say the pure mathematical is not patentable, but if you implement it in the form of software, then it becomes patentable because the EPO says it's patentable despite the exclusion of computer programs. So for me it's abstract matter. So and all those exclusions in the EPC are all about abstract matters like mathematics,
like idea, concept, like way of conduct.
There's mathematics, presentation of information like GUI, computer programs, and business methods for doing business. So all those things have one thing in common, is that they are abstract, and that makes the reference to the current discussion in Alice in the US is that they all say it's an abstract idea, but it's abstract. So that's a criteria that the Supreme Court kind of used to say those matters should be excluded. So they have something in common. The fact that EPO makes an exception for software and even other fields get attacked, because if you look at the EPO jurisprudence on GUIs, on graphical user interface, they also grant patents for, let's say, dragging a mouse and an icon somewhere on the screen. So even other exceptions are getting attacked.
Question from the front right microphone.
Yeah, thank you. Well, thank you for your presentation. It's a very complex issue, and I support the idea. But I would like to, if I may, clarify the answer to the question. Thank you. Well, algorithms as such are not patentable, but in case of MP3, if you have an algorithm, software that solves certain technical problem in a technical way, was the issue you also tried, then it's patentable. That was the case with MP3 and many other software. But, well, I have a couple of issues. Well, to your anecdotal case from Texas, it's true.
Really?
I can't recall the name of the city, but...
Marshall or something like that.
Marshall and Tyler. Marshall.
Yeah, could be, because the company I work for, we have American lawyers who also told us about the situation, Samsung and Apple, because they meet there very often. So, you know, they have to entertain themselves in a certain manner. I would like to point out a very, I think, important issue in a unitary substantive law, because you focused your presentation on procedural matters in case of granting software. But there is in the UPC agreement in Article 27, letter key, I conduct research on patent exceptions and I also focus on this, and there is a provision on interoperability, which as such concern, source code and software as such, but lawmakers for some reason included this in clearly patent law. And I think this is also a very troublemaking issue, and instead of clarifying the situation, it spells only troubles. And if you have any comments, because
Interoperability is about protocols and file formats.
But this is software, like pure software. Mm-hmm. And now you have this in patent law, in material patent law. Mm-hmm. So I think this is an issue because
if you make an exception, we had the same debate during the software patent directive. We had Red Hat and IBM pushing for interoperability exception, because if they saw, like, if the directive is adopted, it's a fallback position to have to diminish the impact of software patents. And the fact that it's in the UPC is a bit worrying, because it means that they imply that software is patentable,
They
have an interoperability exception.
Yes, exactly. And do you have, beside the petition, do you have any other ideas to make further steps in your action? Because I would...
The further steps either I try or other people try to recreate some coalitions of industry in Germany, in the UK, to block the ratification. And I think that should be the first step for me. The legal steps are just, they can be done in the future, after that. But when you have, when you are in a war, you have some bullets to shoot, and it's better to shoot the first bullet, and if the first bullet fails, you still have the second one.
Well, if I may add something here, the problem is that these amendments got to be really huge. It's not like one provision is going to change. This is something like starting work from the bottom, and I don't want to say that it's too late for that, because it wasn't the case that people didn't do anything, because it was, you know, some kind of activities during the years. But I think that that's the main problem, that this is not like the one provision you take out, and you may come up with a conclusion, you may come up with a solution, because this is the easiest way of dialogue. Yeah, we want that kind of change. We want to change actually almost everything, and that's the problem.
Yeah,
you want
to change also mindset, actually.
Yeah, so that's why it's so problematic. It's not simple to address a given action, so it's need to be complex.
Okay, I will give.
We have another question from the front left microphone.
So I have a question with regard to the 20,000 patents you mentioned before. How do we attack those? Because they are still persistent, and they may still also prevent companies for coming into business. I see here another challenge on a case-by-case basis, just to say, okay, all of those patents we have to tackle somehow and to get rid of it.
Well, some of these patents that were mentioned, these were the statistic by the end of 2000, because that was the time when the European Commission entered into plan their action plan. So hopefully, maybe some of them are just expired by now. Experience show is that you may attack that kind of patent, but usually, depending on the court, they would just say that, okay, this is technical. That was what you actually also mentioned about this technical effect, technical function of software. There are many people who doubt that, because if something is purely non-technical, it cannot have any kind of technical aspects. That was the main problem when they started to say that patent law, it's not about protection of technical solutions to technical problems, but also using non-technical ways to resolve some kind of problem that could be described as technical. So nowadays, the statistics in Europe are not that good. In US, it's better, as you saw, because there were almost like, as I noticed, it is like 85% up to 90%. That was the invalidation on the basis that it was abstract method, business method or software. But I also mentioned that nowadays it's combined. It's usually you need a software to introduce this innovative business matter. So the more money you have, the better you come up with. And the main problem is, which you are probably aware of, that sometimes they just sue for fun, even though they know you're gonna lose. The costs are so huge. And when they're first introducing this unitary patent system, they say, we have to do that because it's gonna be cheaper right now to get the patent protection. But for whom cheaper? That's the first question. And then they didn't take into consideration all the litigation. And of course, I'm from country where the innovative in terms of patent application is very, very low. And as you see for the whole European Union map, these countries who are the most developed will just gain the more. So
actually, when you look at Europe in terms of number of software patents per country, all the American big companies, they go France, UK, Germany, and other countries like Poland, mostly they are not concerned about those patents. But the problem with unitary patents is that instead of filing for those three countries, they're going to have the 27 countries for free. So all the countries, Hungary or even Belgium, will get an extension of more patents because they're going to be cheaper, because they're going to cover the whole European Union at once. So this problem of patent inflation that is very visible in the United States because there's a lot of litigation around them is going to come with the unitary patent, because that's the objective of the lawmaker, is to get cheaper patents and enforceable, much more easier, and so on. So the troll phenomena that you see in the US, they are all the ingredients are here with the unitary patent to have the same effect.
Okay, and the last remark, they are very hard to detect, these software patents, because since officially you don't get a patent over software methods, you don't have a given category among which you may make research for. So probably there are lots of software patents that are not called software patents, and you cannot even detect them. So the numbers are also maybe not reflecting the reality.
I'm afraid we're all out of time. Thank you very much, Iga and Benjamin.
Thank you.
If you have any further questions, after the talk.